This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Torrential rain brings a flood threat to the Northeast. In addition to possible tornadoes, thousands of flights have been delayed or canceled. Government offices even shut down early today in Washington, D.C. CBS's Meg Oliver says this is the same system that hits the Midwest and Southern states.
Ominous warnings of an approaching tornado sounded in Flatwoods, Kentucky, as this menacing funnel swept just west in Lexington. Severe thunderstorms packing violent winds stretched across the South, ripping branches off trees in Tennessee.
This is really bad.
Downtown Parkersburg, West Virginia, turned into a flood zone brought on by heavy afternoon rain.
A high heat alert is in effect from Phoenix to New Orleans and is expected to stick around late into the week. Former President Trump's legal team files a motion opposing the Justice Department's motion for a protective order and requests a more limited order. They say it would violate his First Amendment rights in the January 6th case. Now, the special counsel has asked the judge to dismiss the Trump team request. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
Donald Trump's team wants to limit the type of information that would be designated as sensitive to things that include grand jury material, personally identifying information regarding victims, things that are under sealed order, but not all transcripts or reports that the government wants to be protected.
Attorney Ben Crump in Texas Today says he's representing
23 families who have loved ones who died in the care and custody of the Harris County Jail.
The families say that their relatives were deprived of constitutional rights when they died in that jail. Workplace violence is on the rise at hospitals. CBS's Matt Piper explains.
Healthcare workers racked up 73% of all non-fatal injuries than workers in any other profession. Shootings and other attacks are increasing at hospitals across the country.
Workplace violence has escalated.
Sandy Redding with National Nurses United has been a nurse in California for nearly 40 years.
We are seeing increased numbers of workplace violence, especially in some psych wards, the emergency room, even on the med-surg units. Family members don't think their patients are getting the care that they need and deserve in a timely manner.
Some hospitals have opted to have armed security officers, while some states allow them to create their own police forces. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Beyond Meat says its revenue plunged 30.5% in the second quarter as consumer demand for its plant-based meat substitute fell despite price cuts. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Their end-to-end hiring system helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Wendy's Civic Media Radio Stations, providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. This morning, hearings begin as a Chippewa County judge will decide whether the lone suspect in last year's murder of 10-year-old Lily Peters will be tried in his adult or if the case will be moved to juvenile court. A 15-year-old boy is charged with homicide, which carries a mandatory life sentence if he's convicted, as well as two counts of sexual assault. Judge Stephen Gibbs ruled last month that autopsy photos and videos would be sealed, but did not decide whether prosecutors would be limited only to information in the criminal complaint filed with the charges. Peters was found dead in the woods near her home on April 25, 2022. Hearings are scheduled to go into next week in the case. The bodies of two people were recovered in Barron County by officials after a man's body was seen in the water near a running pontoon Friday afternoon in Pekegama Lake near Chetek. The sheriff's office said the bodies of 59-year-old Scott Brumman of Chippewa Falls and 59-year-old Doug Robinson of Chetek were found about 5 hours apart. The Wisconsin DNR is investigating. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
She's the newest of seven elected Wisconsin Supreme Court justices. Janet Protasiewicz begins her 10-year term in August when she is sworn in. It's a longtime tradition which includes use of the court's seal created in 1848. But did you know it features the scales of justice, but not carried by a blindfolded Greek goddess? Instead, a hand holds the scales, representing justice is in human hands. It also means everything is official once the seal is stamped on any court documents. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news because when rain finally falls, it will sit shallow and be absorbed in the top layers of the soil.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the app.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm not going to cure the lepers because they're not going to work anyway. You know, I'm not going to feed the hungry because, well, they're just lazy. I don't think that's how it worked. But this is who they are in action. And again, as I say, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do, especially poor working people. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. How about you?
I'm a little disappointed today, a little down.
Yeah, I heard. Well, what I wanted to say was this. Trump gave the Republican Party and their base and the evangelicals the courage to come out and show they're ugly.
Yeah.
He did. And, you know, it's hard to put that genie back in the bottle once you've set it free. And, you know, they're already living in an alternative universe out there. You know, like last week you were talking about that, The Sound of Freedom, that movie. Well, you know, I researched this, and that movie was not, it was loosely based on events. In the original thing, you know, the guy originally was just tracking down a brother and sister. But they took one of the reviews said literary license. Yeah. They took literary license and creative license.
Theatric liberties.
What they did was they took and they made it a right-wing wish is what they did. And it's very hard to deal with that. And, you know, they do it to everything. Yeah. Look what they're doing. They did to their religion. You know, all of a sudden it's like we believe in Jesus, even though we don't follow nothing that's in that big book which we keep trying to shove down your throat. You know, I mean, like I said to the neighbor the other day, look, do you really think when you die that God or Jesus is going to sit there and ask you how come you didn't stop the gay person or the person having the abortion? No, they're going to ask you about you, what you did or did not do. But you have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, at the end of it, look, I want to live in that world that Michael Cloud talks, Representative Cloud talks about, where people, citizens care about each other, where we create a government of active, engaged citizens. I do. Who believe in the ideals of community and caring and all of that stuff. Kind of, I think that'd be great. Probably never going to happen as long as you've got, you know, greed and all of that in the way. But hey, you know, we can try. I got an email I got to get to. Bernard from Wisconsin sent me an email, and I've been chewing on this one for a couple of days. He said, I heard you talk about Medicare Advantage plans. Now understand, I think Bernard actually works for an insurer that does these plans, because there's a lot in here that seems a little drippy, a little too praising. But he writes, I heard you talk about Medicare Advantage plans recently and the fact that privatization of Medicare will be a horrible thing. I agree with that. Are you afraid of competition? There is a reason Medicare Advantage is now being sought after by the majority, and that is because Medicare has outlived its usefulness. People understand that Medicare is the real waste, not the Advantage plans that pay for prescription drug coverage, dental, vision, and hearing. They offer coordinated care, transportation to doctor's offices, and even grab bars for people's home bathrooms. Medicare does none of that. Bet you won't respond or use this on air. Well, Bernard, bet I will. I did respond, and I will use this on air, because these are talking points. These are the Advantage people's talking points. And first and foremost, let's start with the fact that it's now reached a breaking point of more than half of the people on Medicare or using Medicare money are using a privatized version. And the reason for that, for me, is very simple. Have you seen the advertising blitz that has gone on over the last couple of years? Have you seen the amount of your tax dollars that are going into television, into radio, into print, into every type of social media to get people to go, hey, gym memberships. Hey, because you forgot that, Bernard, gym memberships. They give those too. Tennis shoes and sunglasses to go for your gym membership. All kinds of stuff. there are lots of sweeteners and lots of shiny things. And the question that I got to ask is, and that's secondly, how do you think that they can do all of these things that you laid out and Medicare can't? Why is it that these privatized plans can do the things that Medicare cannot? Because if you remember, there was a big fight over getting hearing, dental, and vision just not too long ago. You may remember it. Democrats were pushing really hard to get that into Medicare. And who fought that, Bernard? Oh, yeah, the Republicans. Tooth and nail. Now you go, it's because, well, they're in the pockets of the insurers. And that's probably true. But it's their ideology to destroy what is public and make it private. And Bernard, as I wrote you, please tell me one thing that privatization has made better. Tell me one thing. Did it make Chicago's parking authority better, or Harrisburg or Pittsburgh or any of the parking authorities across this country that have been privatized and privatized? Has it made that better or cheaper? No. How about the turnpikes that were sold off? How about our for-profit prisons? How about name just about water, sewer authorities? How about just about anything that we, the people, used to do for ourselves? How about anything that we used to do that we said, no, corporations can do it better, more efficient, cheaper, be a better service. Just show me one thing that has led up and turned into what we were sold. Because we were sold, corporations were going to be much more efficient. We were going to get a better product at a cheaper price because of this wonderful magic of competition. And I've been asking this, and Bernard, this is not fair to you, because I've been asking this question for 18 years now, and no one has come up with a reasonable response. It's just what we believe. And, well, what you believe is we're getting screwed at every opportunity. And the frustrating part in this is what's angering to me is what we used to do for ourselves, we've now got to put a profit motive in front of, where we've got to have corporate America who's well-fed and well-profitized. And even when we do try and claw back some, for instance, Medicare cannot negotiate for prescription drugs. Thank you, George W. Bush. Thank you, Republicans. So now you got Joe Biden going, hey, maybe on a couple of these drugs, we should do this. And what happens? Well, all of Big Pharma, Bristol Myers Squibb, all of them, the Chamber of Commerce, all of them, Merck, all of them now are suing the government because their First and Fifth Amendment rights are being violated, they say. What actually it is, it's the $25 billion that Medicare might save that they're really suing for. It's not their free speech or their right against self-incrimination. It had nothing to do with that. It's about the money. And anytime you hear privatization, anytime you go, hey, there's this shiny thing over here, be very, very afraid, because I come back to, how do they do all those wonderful things on the same dollar that Medicare uses? How do they do that? They do it by denying you care. Maybe look into that, Bernard. Thanks for the email. You got a question, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1978. That was the day President Jimmy Carter declared a federal health emergency at Love Canal in the city of Niagara Falls, New York. Premier spokeswoman, housewife Lois Gibbs, became the poster child for the citizens' environmental justice movement virtually overnight. Niagara Falls Gazette journalists had broken the story 2 years earlier. Residential sump pump testings and health surveys found a number of toxic chemicals and unusually high rates of
cancers, birth defects, miscarriages, and other serious health concerns. Initially planned as a canal, the site remained abandoned until the 1940s. That's when Hooker Electrochemical Plant and the city began using the site to dispose of toxic chemicals and municipal waste. More than 20,000 tons of toxic sludge containing more than 21,000 chemicals were buried there. Then, in 1953, the city school board bought the site and built two schools on the property. Soon, about 1,000 families settled nearby. By the early 1970s, residents complained of foul odors, health issues, substances filling their basements, and leaky waste disposal drums popping up in their backyards, killing all plant life. Carter's initial declaration provided limited funding, but the disaster led to the passage of the Superfund Act. The neighborhood was demolished, and residents were compensated and relocated. The new owner of Hooker Chemical, Occidental Petroleum, settled with the EPA for $129 million. Despite 21 years of remediation and residential redevelopment, new residents complained in 2011 of foul odors and ruptured sewer lines oozing toxic sludge. By 2014, 1,000 new complaints had been filed, contending the area had never been properly remediated.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
How about a little bit of good news for a change? Specifically, good news about news. The demise of local newspapers has been a very depressing story in the last few years, with several thousand of them gobbled up by Wall Street profiteers. Those money powers loot the publication's assets, then callously shut down each community's paper or reduces them to empty news shells. So, that's that. Local print journalism is passé, right? Wrong. High-spirited, community-minded subscribers in places like Glen Rose, Texas, Hamburg, Iowa, Portland, Maine, and International Falls, Minnesota, are humming an upbeat tune of regeneration that could be titled, Not Dead Yet. In Maine, for example, 5 of the state's 6 daily papers and 17 weeklies were sinking under the ownership of an investment group, but all were recently bought by the National Trust for Local News, a nonprofit started 2 years ago. The trust is turning each publication over to local nonprofit owners and helping them find ways to become sustainable. Another new effort called Cherry Road Media has bought 77 rural papers in 17 states, most from the predatory Gannett conglomerate that wanted to dump them. Cherry Road's business plan is simple, old-time genius. Return editorial decision-making to local people and journalists who know the town. Be an active presence and participant in community affairs. Make the locals responsible for sustaining their town's paper and, most important, reinvest profits in real local journalism that advances democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, in both of these new initiatives, the foremost mission is to serve the common good of the communities, not to pad the wealth of a few distant financiers. To learn more about these models and how you might implement something similar in your town, contact Institute for Rural Journalism, ruraljournalism.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, you know, we had David Pepper on not too long ago, and we were talking about his book, you know, Laboratories of Autocracy. You know, the states. And one of the states that I've been paying attention to, you know, one of the laboratories of autocracy, state of Iowa. Iowa has lost its freaking mind on alum. And it's kind of been the petri dish of really bad ideas that are being spread everywhere else. But, you know, for me, I remember, you know, because I got to tell you, Senator Harkin was one of my favorite people in the Senate. And to see that state go from a moderate, solid, moderate Democratic state to, wow, what we see now, quite disturbing. And that's why I've asked our good friend Sammy Sheets to come talk with us. Sammy's an Iowa state representative, one of our frontline guys in pointing out all of the horrible. Sammy, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
So I'm looking at Iowa again. I guess you got an abortion ban now, huh?
Yeah, we do. The Republican Party decided to pull us all back after the legislative session, spend tens of thousands of dollars to pay legislators to come back from across the state to ban, basically ban abortion in the state of Iowa. It's technically a 6-week fetal heartbeat bill, but as we know, 98% of abortions are not found within the first 6 weeks of pregnancy. And the Republican Party, despite overwhelming majority of Iowans, our gold standard of polling is Ann Seltzer in the Des Moines Register Iowa poll, found that almost 70% of Iowans, 61%, support protecting reproductive rights in almost all cases. And it goes even higher. 70% of women support that as well. But the Republicans, you know, per usual, are putting in place policies that go against the interest of Iowans. And they're taking back a right that women have had in this state for over 50 years. And I think and I hope that Iowans will make them pay a political price for doing so, for taking away freedoms and rights instead of ensuring them and enshrining them like so many other states across the country are doing right now.
Yeah. Now, my problem with all of this is I hear a lot of these people talk about being pro-life. Yeah, we're pro-life. We're pro-life. Exactly how many bills have your Republican friends who are now forcing this on women in your state? How many of them have brought forth bills, oh, I don't know, to make sure that when those children are born, they get health care, that they get a good education, that they get fed? How many of those pieces of legislation are to help especially poor and working class mothers be able to afford child care? How many of those bills are banging around in your house right now on the Republican side?
Absolutely zero. And they've done the exact opposite. And it's such hypocrisy because the Republican Party, this legislative session this year, passed a bill to kick tens of thousands of children off of their SNAP benefits and almost 1,000 children off of their health care. So when they talk about being pro-life and try and enshrine themselves in their party and pro-life language, it's complete BS.
Well, the good thing.
Go ahead.
The good thing, Sammy, is that they did pass that child labor bill, so those kids could pull themselves up by their bootstraps. You know, because the meatpacking plants, they always need people to clean up on the kill floor.
Yeah. So the Republicans have decided, as well, during this past legislative session, that instead of paying workers that should be working a livable wage, instead of paying them what they deserve, giving them respect, instead of reinstating what used to be our gold standard of collective bargaining agreements in the state of Iowa, hey, let's solve the Republican-created workforce crisis by putting children back into the workforce. That's the Republican solution to a problem that they created. And it's putting children in danger across the state. And we're already seeing the repercussions. And we also have now children 16 and 17 that are serving alcohol across the state of Iowa. And nothing's, you know, safer than having 16 and 17 year old girls serving alcohol to adults. Yeah, right.
And so, no, the other part of this is when I first heard that, I'm going, wait a second, let me think about this for a minute. I remember being 16.
Yep.
I remember being 16. And I think we all remember being 16. If you would have given me the ability to serve alcohol to my friends or, you know, to myself, do you think I would have not taken that advantage? Do you think I would have not done that? And this is where, again, it's like we're setting people up for failure and knowing, I don't know, it's really twisted to me what I'm seeing happening in your state.
Not just failure, we're putting them in danger. That's fundamentally what this is doing. It's putting children in danger. And it's because Republicans and their corporate donors are unwilling to pay people a living wage and give them respect. That's fundamentally what it is. The workforce crisis that we're seeing in Iowa is because of that. We have the lowest minimum wage and we're surrounded by states, many states, that are even more conservative than us. But business interests continue to argue against raising the minimum wage. That's still $7.25. an hour in the state of Iowa. Jeez. That's not a living wage. That's a starvation wage.
And the other part of this is what I didn't bring up, you know, because you went there first, having 16-year-old girls and some and boys too, serving alcohol in those kind of places. You know, we hear our Republican friends talk about groomers and pedophiles a lot. In fact, an awful lot. It's almost like that's all that's on their minds. It seems to me that putting young people in that situation only makes that kind of outcome more likely, more possible, and maybe something we should, maybe not do.
Yeah, look, fundamentally, this bill this law, now that the governor signed it, is going to put children in our state in danger, and that's fundamentally wrong. They're putting corporate interests over our children. in so many different ways in our state.
Now, here's the thing, you know, Sammy, and this is where my mind kind of goes into this place of, you know, I'm starting to believe that the Republican Party knows that their days are numbered. And because they're doing a lot of this really extreme stuff that corporations and extremists want. They seem to be doing it very quickly and in a very coordinated effort. Because I look at Ohio, you know, on Tuesday in Ohio, they're gonna try and ram through a law to make amending the Constitution even more difficult than it already mm-hmm. is, because they know they've got to hold on to that to hold on to power. How much of this do you think is in that world that they see their days potentially numbered? Because you said a moment ago, you hope there's a bloodbath at the polls when people go and send these people packing. I'm curious your thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting because Republicans, I thought for a long time, were very, very disciplined in terms of not over, you know, they thought very strategically in the long term. But for whatever reason, in the last couple of years, it might be the Trump effect, it might be other things. The way that they legislated this session, I can really only speak to Iowa, is that they thought that they could pass whatever and not face any political consequences, even when the policies that they advocated for were completely out of step with what Iowans want. They passed $1 billion voucher scheme that's going to take our public tax dollars and hand it out to rich kids to go to private school. And we already talked about the abortion ban that the vast majority of Iowans oppose. Their legislation and their policies completely go against what the people of Iowa want and need. And so my hope is that Iowans are going to actually hold them accountable at the polls next year.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the child labor thing is huge. And you know, we had a listener, you know, call in and say, hey, look, you know, in Chicago, you can't get a minor to ring up alcohol at the grocery store or tobacco for that matter. Mm-hmm. And now you're going to have, you know, kids serving it in bars. It's lunacy. And it seems like the want for trouble, you know, I go back to this, you know, these are the folks who tell us that they're pro-life, and I can't find where that is.
They're not. They're fundamentally not. They want to take away rights from people. And then if a child is born, like I can go on and on about in the state of Iowa, they've privatized our Medicaid over the past couple of years, which is disproportionately affecting kids with disabilities and who are in poverty. We've talked about the SNAP benefits that now tens of thousands of children are going hungry as a result of Republican policies. They're not worried about being pro-life. They're worried about catering to a small sliver of their base and to special interests. And that's what the abortion ban, that's what a voucher scheme that's $1 billion that's going to defund our public education system, which 95% of kids in Iowa use. Tell me that's pro-life.
You're listening to the Rick Smith Show here with Iowa State Representative Sammy Sheets. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, again, I come back to this moment. I think we're in a moment in this country where we've got to decide what our identity is. I thought we had solved this 100 years ago. I thought we had on the child labor front. Mm-hmm. You know, my hope is that seeing how extreme Republicans have gotten, and very quickly, I mean, understand, all of this stuff has been banging around in their think tanks for years. The right pays smart people a lot of money to come up with bad ideas. And now right. They've got a legislature, not just in Iowa, but across the country in a number of places, that are willing to move on these bad ideas. What's it going to take? You know, I traveled across Iowa. We talked to people. When you talk to them one-on-one, I get a sense that, you know, we're all in the same place. But when you start putting them in groups and you start putting, you know, hats on them, you know, red hat, blue hat, mm-hmm. things get really crazy. How do you see a way forward?
So I've talked to you about this before. I really fundamentally think we can whine about what Republicans do, whether they just how they campaign on falsehoods, etc. I mean, they ran in Iowa, for instance, on inflation and economic responsibility for a couple of years, and then spent the entire legislative session kicking poor people while they were down and, you know, attacking LGBTQ youth, etc., etc. We as Democrats can only control what we can control, and that's our messaging. That's how we talk to voters. That's how we connect with voters. And I've said this before, and I'll say it 100 times again. We have to rebuild the Democratic Party as a workers' party and a party for the working class of this country. Iowa is a place that has 2/3 of its population that didn't go to college or university. 66% of the state is a non-college educated. It's mostly white. That's reflective of a lot of the upper Midwest and places like where you're from, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Minnesota, Wisconsin. And we desperately need to reconnect with working class people. So I think our messaging has to be on what can Democrats do to materially improve your lives, whether that's better schools, that's better benefits, that's making sure that kids don't go hungry in our state. That's more, you know, improved access to health care. It's so many things that that government can do. And instead, Republicans are using our state resources to give away tax credits to billionaires, to large corporations. Democrats are the people that fight for working people. We're on their side, and Republicans use all their political capital and energy to serve their political donors.
Yeah,
and this is not a process. This is not a good process that's going to happen overnight. It's hard to rebuild a brand and trust, but the working people of Iowa are suffering every single day that Republicans are in power. So it's not about when or how it's about how we get this done, because has to happen.
Absolutely. I'm 100% with you. And one of the things that I rail against is privatization. You talked about the privatization of Medicaid and that, you know, I had an email just recently about, you know, the privatization of Medicare. And this person, Bernard from Wisconsin, was, you know, all down the, hey, we get gym memberships and, you know, sunglasses and, you know, they give us mugs and all kinds of sweeteners. The care that we get, you know, probably going to be not the same, but hey, we get shiny stuff. And I argue privatization is one of the central issues that Democrats have to run against.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, I haven't mentioned yet, we have to put this in context. You're on a national show. These policies are not, you know, just randomly created or propagated by a random state legislator who had a bright idea. This is a national movement from the far right to enact these policies in as many states as possible. Iowa, unfortunately, is being swarmed right now by right-wing political candidates for the Republican nomination for president. And so we hear over and over every day when we wake up and read the paper, watch TV, about just how radical some of the people in the Republican Party are, and some of the top people that are running for office, whether it's national 6-week abortion bans, whether it's gutting, you know, workers' rights even further than the Republicans have done so far. So many of the bills that we saw in Iowa can be traced directly to places like Florida, to Alabama, to Arkansas, places like that where right-wing interest groups have basically taken on a national playbook. And to your point, they're very successful at it. They have tons of money and they do a good job of enacting these policies despite the will of the people in so many of these states.
No, as I just said, you know, they spend a lot of money, hire a lot of really smart people to come up with really bad ideas. And look, it's not just, as you said, it's a national strategy. And I come back to, I fear we're kind of in the last throes of the Republican Party. And I think there's part of me that thinks they know it. I don't know what that looks like when Trumpism and the MAGA stuff explodes into what's next. And that's one of the things I've been worried about, you know, because Trump is so far. Where does the next guy take it? I mean, do we have someone who comes all out and finally says out loud, and a party who advocates we should do nothing for the commons, the government should do nothing. We should privatize everything, including our government, you know, basically making us a fascist country.
Yeah, but the problem with Trump is that he's been very skillful at telling working class people that his policies and his rhetoric are what they need to improve their lives. And obviously, it has a little bit of an extra racist tinge to it when he also says that Muslims and immigrants are the reason that your wages are declining, that your town is shut down because of deindustrialization. Not that because multinational corporations and terrible free trade deals have caused tens of thousands, if not millions, of workers in manufacturing to lose their jobs. He blames it on immigrants and minorities, because that's the easier political thing to do, is to instill fear into people. But I mean, long term, I can, you know, really only speak to what's happening in Iowa. I don't see a way where the Republican Party does not have political consequences for taking away rights from half of the people in the state, from gutting our public education system. We care about public education, love public education so much in Iowa, we put it on our damn state coin. And people have known for decades about how good our public education system is. And so when you come and strip away the foundation of what our state has been for decades, generations, they're going to pay a price for it politically.
That's the hope, unless they come up with some of the legislation we've been seeing banging around in other states to limit people's ability to vote, putting roadblocks in front of people being able to vote, you know, just throwing them off the rolls because, hey, that postcard we mailed you, you know, 16 weeks ago, you didn't respond to. Sorry. I know it looked like junk mail, but, you know, hey, better luck next time.
Yeah, exactly.
Crazy times we live in, Sammy, but it's a good thing we got folks like you on the beat doing the good work. I appreciate your time and the stuff you're doing. I hope you'll come back and talk to us again real soon.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick.
Again, I hate hearing this stuff coming from Iowa. I hate hearing it coming from anywhere, but especially there. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
Phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2.
This day in labor history, the year was 1890. That was the day that one of the heroines of the U.S. labor movement, Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, was born in Concord, New Hampshire. Elizabeth learned her progressive politics at a young age. Her father was a socialist and her mother a feminist. Elizabeth was kicked out of high school for speaking out in favor of socialism. This did not slow her down. She kept speaking and her reputation grew. She became a member of the Industrial Workers of the World. She traveled the country organizing and speaking to workers. From the Minnesota Iron Range to the textile mills of Lawrence, Massachusetts, Elizabeth was on the front lines of the labor struggle. She was arrested for her activity 10 times, but was never sentenced. During World War I, Flynn was arrested and stood trial for speaking out against the war. The experience led her to become one of the founders of the American Civil Liberties Union, an organization dedicated to protecting freedom of speech. In the 1930s, Flynn became a member of the U.S. Communist Party, writing a regular column for the Daily Worker. But despite her personal political ideas, she supported Democratic Party President Franklin Delano Roosevelt in 1944. During the 1950s, she was caught up in the anti-communist hysteria led by Senator Joe McCarthy. She went to prison for 2 years for allegedly violating the Smith Act, a law against overthrowing the government. She died while on a visit to Russia in 1964. More than 20,000 people attended her funeral there. A monument to Flynn stands at the Forest Home Cemetery just outside of Chicago, where she is buried alongside the graves of Eugene Dennis, Big Bill Haywood, and the Haymarket Martyrs. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Well, that's weird. It's rare that when I listen to the it's rare that I listen to the commercial breaks, but one of our labor history in twos just talked about Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, and you know she was a feminist labor activist, she was born in 1890, during the World War I, World War II era, she was an activist. She was known as the Rebel Girl, because she gave these incredibly fiery speeches. She was the founder of the American Civil Liberties Union. She advocated for women being able to vote, but evidently, she joined the Communist Party in 1936, was sent to jail in 1951. She died at the age of 74. This is one of those weird moments. Today, the story broke. Now, she's been dead since 1964. Evidently, they just put up a marker in her honor in the place where she was born. And the state of New Hampshire just took it down. I guess it's been up since May 1st. They took it down. They're now being, now the state of New Hampshire is being sued, because they took this marker down. And I got to tell you, this is one of those, I was expecting this kind of stuff, because, you know, the right feels that they're being mistreated because we're taking down the traitors and the Confederate monuments. You know, they took down Robert E. Lee. We're going to go after Elizabeth Gurley Flint. Yeah, it is what it is. It was evidently one of more than 275 across the state that described the people and the places from the from Revolutionary War soldiers to sports figures. You know, any notable. But it was taken down after just a couple, I guess, just a couple of weeks, and this is where they're suing. But it's incredible to me that again, gonna push. And for me, it's about history. If you're going to have that kind of wide breadth of people to have these monuments for, yeah, I don't know. Now look, the Robert E. Lee ones and those, there should be a place for those. I didn't say destroy them. I said they shouldn't be government supported. They shouldn't be put in places that are in the public square. I think we should have them in places where history is learned. And this is the same kind of thing. I think we should know the history of this country. Just my thoughts. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So evidently the pandemic is officially over. No, I don't believe that. In fact, you know, my producer actually right now, going through the COVID again. But I say it's over because Zoom evidently is telling all the people, okay, time to come back to work, time to come back to the workplace, time to bring yourself back into the office. No more working over Zoom. And this is one of these things. I go, you know, the messaging out of this for me is remarkable. No more working over Zoom. Sorry. What do you think is going to happen when the messaging is the Zoom employees have to go back to work? The Zoom employees can no longer Zoom into work. What's that going to say for everyone else? And I got to wonder what's going to happen to Zoom stock down the road as we no longer, well, Zoom. Just a thought. They said in January of 2022, Zoom had only 2% of its employees on site. Wow. Evidently, the company employs more than 8,400 people worldwide. That's a lot of people. That is a lot of people. Now, FedEx evidently is laying off a bunch of people. And this was sent to me by a listener who said, is this automation? And I'm going to argue partially, maybe. But for right now, this is just, you know, this is now just the layoff in the York area that I was sent the story of, because evidently in here in York, Pennsylvania, they're laying off 220 people. In Texas, they're laying off a bunch of people. In other places, they're laying folks off. Part of it is potentially moving towards automation. I don't think we're going to get hit with a slew of that right away. I think that's coming. But this particular one is even more outrageous to me than automation. This is FedEx going, you know what? We're not going to do this anymore. We're going to hire a third-party logistics provider to come and do this. We're going to have someone else do it so that we don't actually, these aren't actually our employees. These are someone else's problem. We're just getting our work done. And, you know, I got to wonder, you know, because I've been asking around and I don't know yet, but I got to wonder how much of this